Ladies and gentlemen, we present at this time the regular Sunday afternoon address of Father Charles E. Coughlin from Royal Oak, Michigan. After you listen to the address by Father Coughlin, you're invited to write your comments to WHBI, Newark, New Jersey.
Ladies and gentlemen, once more it is my privilege to present to you Father Charles E. Coughlin from the Shrine of the Little Flower at Royal Oak, Michigan. He will speak to you this afternoon on a subject pertinent to persecution and communism. As you know, this hour is in no sense a donated hour. It is paid for at full commercial rates. This is your hour. This is your presentation. As long as you desire to have Father Coughlin a guest in your home each Sunday afternoon over these same stations, and at this same hour, he will be glad to speak fearlessly and courageously to you as he presents a message of Christianity and Americanism to Catholic and Protestant and religious Jew. Many thousands in this audience will desire to obtain a copy of this afternoon's address. Copies of this address can be had by writing directly to Father Coughlin at Royal Oak, Michigan. Pictures of certain documents to which Father Coughlin is about to refer can also be had by all those writing in for a copy of this week's broadcast. Transcribed and directed by Mr. Emil Cote of New York, the Little Flower Choristers with Mr. Cyril Gutherell at the organ before me will sing for you the Advent hymn, Come, O Come, Emmanuel. During the singing of this hymn, please phone some friend or family to listen in to this broadcast, which will be of outstanding interest to every American. Immediately following, Father Coughlin will come to the microphone.
Thank you.
And now may I present to you Father Coughlin.
Good afternoon, my friends. By way of introduction, and before I deliver the address prepared for this afternoon, I have this following announcement to make. Following last Sunday's discourse, a local newspaper said, quotations, "It is obvious that Father Coughlin either does not know what the word interview means, or is giving still further evidence of his congenital inability to tell the truth," unquote. These printed remarks were occasioned by a statement which I incorporated in last Sunday's address relative to the alleged Henry Ford, Rabbi Franklin interview, an interview which was printed locally in Detroit. I was not present at this interview. It was reported to me in a statement signed by Mr. Harry Bennett of the Ford Motor Corporation, and which I read last Sunday, and which will be reproduced over Mr. Bennett's signature in Social Justice Magazine next week. Because news reports printed last Monday tended to discredit the statement, I secured a second signed statement from Mr. Harry Bennett of the Ford Motor Corporation last Monday afternoon. It reads as follows, Dearborn, Michigan, December 5th, 1938. Quotations, "A statement which resulted in casting reflections of an exceedingly serious nature upon the veracity of Father Coughlin appeared in the Detroit Free Press Monday, December 5th, 1938, based upon a statement which it was alleged I made. It labeled statements of Father Coughlin regarding Rabbi Franklin's recent visit to the Ford offices for the purpose of getting an expression of the Jewish situation in Germany as untrue. This is to definitely state that absolutely no interview was given in response to Rabbi Franklin's request by Mr. Ford to be printed as Mr. Ford's own statement in the press, but merely agreed with certain written expressions, and the statement given by Father Coughlin on December 4, 1938 was an absolutely correct verbatim report of a statement having my own approval and signature, signed Harry H. Bennett, December 5, 1938. Unquote. I make this announcement to set at ease the minds of this radio audience and to let it be known that in preparing my broadcasts, I rest my assertions upon documentary evidence. Because the newspapers and news services saw fit not to publish the photostatic copies of the two original signed statements, which I handed to them last Monday afternoon following my visit to the Ford Motor Corporation, I shall have them printed in Social Justice Magazine next week in order to complete the record. It is my hope that this announcement concludes a local issue as far as I am concerned. Ladies and gentlemen, last week a representative of the Jewish Community Council of Detroit sought to obtain adequate radio facilities to be used in broadcasting an official Jewish answer to my three previous addresses. Recognizing that this gentleman was confronted with many mechanical difficulties in obtaining a clearance of a full hour over a large group of radio stations, and upon such short notice, I conveyed to him through Mr. Leo Fitzpatrick an invitation for the General Jewish Council, a national body to which the local Jewish Council is affiliated, an invitation to use the facilities of my network on this hour and at my expense. The General Jewish Council has declined the invitation. However, over most of these stations, and at its own expense, the General Jewish Council will address this audience sometime later today. Their spokesman will not be a Jewish gentleman. He will be the Catholic attorney, Mr. Frank Hogan of Washington, District of Columbia. I wish to impress upon this audience that Mr. Hogan is speaking for the General Jewish Council to which is affiliated all the local Jewish community councils of America. I take this opportunity to invite my audience to listen attentively to this Catholic spokesman as he pleads the case, shall I say, of the Jews, or shall I say of the General Jewish Council and the local Jewish community council. This attorney's address, about to be delivered under the auspices of the General Jewish Council, will be better appreciated following the discourse which I am about to deliver, because I will deal pertinently with certain activities, constitutional activities, of the Jewish community councils which are related to the General Jewish Council. My friends, It is appropriate for me to re-express the thoughts which were woven in bold colors throughout the last three discourses. They are these. I hold no animosity towards the Jews. I distinguish most carefully between good Jews and bad Jews, as well as I do between the good Gentiles and bad Gentiles. I sincerely sympathize with the millions of humble religious Jews, both in America and elsewhere, who have been persecuted by a thoughtless world, a world which does not always distinguish between the good Jews and the bad Jews, a world which lashes at the pillar of persecution the innocent Jews for the misdemeanors of the guilty Jews. Openly and fearlessly do I admit that my main contention is with the atheistic Jew and Gentile, the communistic Jew and Gentile, who have been responsible and will continue to be responsible in great part, both for the discriminations and the persecutions inflicted upon the Jews as a body. To prevent happening in America what has happened elsewhere, and to end once and for all the hostility of German Nazism towards Jews, I ask my fellow citizens not only to oppose Nazism, an effect of communism, but to fight manfully against communism itself. I further appeal to them to apply the basic principle of science in their common effort to destroy persecution. The basic principle which teaches us that in order to remove effects permanently, the causes which produce them must be removed first. And finally, I reminded both Jew and Gentile that ours is not a problem of anti-Semitism. Ours is a problem of anti-communism. Thus, the issue is clear. The Jews of America cannot afford to be identified with communism or with communistic activities. They are asked to disassociate themselves from the atheistic Jews who espouse communism. Therefore, every person worthy of the name of Christian stands prepared to oppose the excesses of Nazism, stands prepared to extend the right hand of sympathy towards the persecuted Jews in Germany. But every intelligent American Christian whose heart bleeds for his 20 million fellow Christians who were butchered by the Trotskys and Belikuns, the Bronsteins and the Cohens in Soviet Russia, in the Ukraine, in Hungary and elsewhere, they appeal to the Jews of America to join with them in removing communism, the cause of Nazism. They appeal particularly to the eminent sons of Jewry, who have risen so high in government, in journalism, in banking, in broadcasting, and in motion pictures, to launch an effective, determined campaign against the red menace which has baptized the hillsides and valleys of Europe with the blood of 20 million Christian martyrs. The best answer the jury can give me or America is not a passionate denial that Jews, far beyond their proportion of population, are not interested in furthering communism. Official action will speak more eloquently than 10,000 denials. In asking the Gentiles of America to oppose the Gentiles of the Nazi Party in Germany, Jews are not seeking anything that is unreasonable. On the other hand, when the Gentiles of America ask the Jews in this country to oppose the Jews in Russia, in Spain, and elsewhere, who are supporting communism to our detriment and to the detriment of the Christians living abroad, we are asking nothing unreasonable. Oh, there comes a time in the life of every individual as well as in the life of every nation when righteousness and justice must take precedence over the bonds of race and blood. Tolerance then becomes a heinous vice when it tolerates the theology of atheism, the patriotism of internationalism, and the justice of religious persecution. No matter then what ties of blood and common parentage bind the God-fearing Jews in New York with the atheistic Jews in Moscow, those ties must be severed for God, for country, and for the preservation of the teeming masses of Jews in America who have been victimized by the silence of their leaders and the propaganda of the press. Everyone recognizes that Soviet Russia has made anti-Semitism a crime. The entire world recognizes that Soviet Russia has made pro-Christianity, pro-theism, and pro-religion likewise crimes. Everyone recognizes the predominance of atheistic Jews in the pattern of Russian communism. Evidence is so overwhelming to substantiate this statement that it is idle for any informed person to attempt disputing it. On this point, let me quote for you from an article by James E. Abbe, which appeared in the New Outlook in February 1934. It says, "Comrade Smirnovich, the Red Pope, an atheist, is the official restrainer and regulator of religion in the USSR. He is a member of the important Central Executive Committee. As the official Antichrist of the Soviet Republics, he decides how far the remaining priests of the church may go towards preaching the word of God. Kindly, cultured, educated, tolerant in manner, Smirnovich says religion will die out when divorced from superstitious ritual, pomp, and fear. His job is to help kill it. Men of the Red Army sing as they march," continues this article. "Over 1 million of these sons are under arms in Russia today, and millions are in reserve. More millions are being born than starved. He or those who control the Red Army control Russia, a force to be reckoned with. But the men who control Russia are not Russians. They are not Slavs. Stalin is a Georgian, a different race. Kaganovich is a Jew. Litvinov is a Jew. Karakhan, Armenian. Smirnovich, who controls and destroys religion, is a Jew. Orjonikidze is Georgian. Kurtz is Austrian. Karl Radek, a Jew. Men in business for Russia in strategic positions, buyers and traders, are rarely ever Russian. Members of the Jewish race from all over the world predominate. Every member of the Foreign Office Press Censor Bureau is a Jew. Little men of Russia who help in responsible positions, heads of offices, trusts, are mostly Jews," unquote the article. Further unfortunate evidence of atheistic Jews dominating the destinies of communists in Hungary is also presented. From an official government document which I have before me, and a picture of which will be reproduced in Social Justice magazine, we learn of the close relationship existing between atheistic Jews and communism. In Hungary, under the atheistic Jew Bela Kun, Aaron Cohen, apostate Jews dominated communism with its mass murder of more than 20,000 Christians in a period of 130 days of horror. Out of 11 department heads in the Hungarian Communist cabinet, 9 were Jews. Out of 30 total members, there were 20 Jews. And the departments of the Interior, Finance, Education, Foreign Relations, War, Food and Supplies were 100% manned by Jews. My friends, I refer to these records for one purpose only, for it is my desire as a non-Jew to tell you, my fellow Jewish citizens, to tell you the truth, to inform you what thoughts millions of persons are entertaining. In Europe particularly, Jews in great numbers have been identified with the communist movement, with communist slaughter and Christian persecution. But which one of you will uphold the activities of these men, these Lunacharskys and Belakuns and Trotskys? None of you religious Jews who love your God. None of you intelligent Jews whose minds are too well developed to be captivated by the false philosophy of tolerance, tolerance towards atheism, tolerance towards mass murder, tolerance towards the progenitor of Nazism. Oh, the hour has struck when neither Jew nor Gentile in America can afford to be associated with communism, even through the medium of silence. I am giving voice to a sentiment which is expressed in millions of homes and in thousands of gatherings. Thus, for his collective safety. The American Jew must repudiate the atheistic Jew. Communism must be stamped out, else an illogical world will build up a defense mechanism against it in these United States, paralleling, if not surpassing, the same illogical defense mechanism which operates under Nazism. Ladies and gentlemen, there are millions of innocent Americans who do not grasp the essential meaning of communism. They are inclined to believe that only he is a communist who carries in his pocket a card proving that he has paid his dues to some communist organization. A card does not make a man a communist any more than a baptismal certificate makes a man a saint. The thoughts which a man entertains, the policy which he pursues, these are the internal causes which generate communists, and these causes are reduced in their final crystallization to the one word, atheism, and all it implies. Show me a man who disbelieves in God, and particularly who opposes the dissemination of knowledge concerning God, and I will show you an embryonic communist. One who, if he is logical, will soon stand beside Lunashovsky and Smirnovich and their cohorts, determined to rid this world of all religion and supplant it with the doctrines of the Soviet. Show me a man whose policies completely ostracize God from our public institutions, and I will show you a person who indirectly is working hand in glove with the Belakuns, the Trotskys, the Stalins, and the Lenins. Any policy which pursues the course of secularizing our homes, our government, our public institutions, is a policy which logically leads to the adoption of the principles of communism with its resultant mass murder and economic chaos. On this point, my friends, do not be confused. Towards this godlessness which is imposed upon us through the so-called secularization of our public institutions, entertain no tolerance, any more than you would be tolerant towards our rattlesnake. For it is an insidious serpent which sooner or later will sting you to death if you caress it against your bosom. Having clarified that point, a point which is not disputed by any Christian or by any religious, God-fearing Jew, permit me to speak of its application in America. Permit me to refer to the General Jewish Council and the local Jewish community councils. At the outset, I graciously admit the contributions towards religion and culture accredited to Jews. I am not ignorant of the poems of David. I am no stranger to the saga lived by Moses and his contemporaries. Many precious hours have I spent in the companionship of the prophets of Israel. However, when the house of our civilization is wrapped in the lurid flames of destruction, this is not the time for idle eulogizing. When the house is on fire, its tenants are not apt to gather in the drawing room to be thrilled by its paintings and raptured by its sculpture, its poetry, its tomes of music, or its encyclopedia of science, which are there on exhibit. When the house is on fire, as is the house of our civilization today, we dispense with gratifying our vanities and call in the fire department to save our possessions, lest they be lost in the general conflagration. All about us the angry flames of communism, of godlessness, are devouring not only the contributions which Jewry has made to our generation, but also the benedictions which our Gentile ancestors have contributed towards our well-being. Behold, Russia is a shambles. China is a battlefield. France is a social chaos. Spain is a slaughterhouse. Mexico is a spiritual volcano. And even our own United States is beclouded with a crimson smoke which chokes our progress. We are concerned, then, with extinguishing this fire, before it consumes our inheritance, and before its flames of hatred enfold themselves around the millions of innocent Jews and Gentiles in a holocaust of persecution. American Jewry is also concerned with the welfare of the 3 million Jews resident in Russia. 3 million who, according to every valid report, now occupy many major places of prominence in the Soviet government.